You're listening to Radio Rounds, a talk show created and hosted by medical students. Coming up on today's show,
we are using something called NutriButter, which is a lipid-based nutrient supplement made up of peanut butter, a little bit of powdered milk, and then it has 40 vitamins, minerals, and micronutrients in the recommended daily allowance for young kids. And so what we are doing is working with kids between the ages of 6 and 24 months and providing the supplement while at the same time doing a program of nutritional education.
That was Dr. Meg Sullivan, Medical Director for Timi Global Health in Guatemala. All that and more on Radio Rounds right now.
Here come the radio rounding, we're rounding, we're rounding. Welcome to Radio Rounds.
Welcome to Radio Rounds, everyone. I'm John Corker, and I'm joined in studio today by guest and co-host Timi Global Health Executive Director Matt McGregor. Matt, it's great to have you here. Welcome to the show.
It's great to be here.
Today we talk about your organization, Matt, as an example of an American-based group that addresses healthcare needs of some of the neediest communities around the world. In a minute, we'll listen to our conversation with your medical director in Guatemala, Dr. Meg Sullivan, who is truly transforming the overall health of the communities in which she works. But before we do that, can you speak a little bit to our listeners about the mission and day-to-day work of Timi Global Health?
Whenever I talk about Timi, I always say that Timi has a hybrid mission. Half of our mission is really expanding access to healthcare in marginalized communities around the world, mostly in the developing world. And the other half of our mission is really empowering students and volunteers, many of whom want to go on to be medical professionals, to tackle today's global health challenges firsthand. On the expanding access to healthcare side, we do that in a number of ways. We send medical teams abroad to support our partner organizations on the ground. We finance our partner organizations, hospitals, medical clinics, health programming, both with in-kind resources, medicines and medical supplies, but also with direct finance, funds that help them, you know, accomplish and achieve their missions. On the student side, we are very, very interested in making sure that students, both undergrads and medical students and graduate students, understand that they don't need to wait for a white coat or they don't need to wait for a checkbook to help solve some of the most impressive and the most important problems that we're addressing, that they can get involved very young. So we work with student chapters around the United States, both at medical schools as well as at undergrad universities, and we give them an opportunity to really engage with our partner organizations abroad, not just by traveling with us and working in our clinics, but also by advocating for those organizations when they get back to their campuses, fundraising for those organizations, and even taking a role in decision-making when it comes to how we spend our money and what programs and projects we invest in.
And our featured guest for the day certainly has taken an intimate role in both halves of that great mission. Dr. Meg Sullivan serves as the medical director for Timi Global Health's operations in Guatemala. A graduate of Yale University and the University of California at San Diego Medical School, Dr. Sullivan provides primary health care at the Pope Wu Clinic in Quetzaltenango, Guatemala. Dr. Sullivan also supervises and mentors U.S. medical students participating in the medical Spanish program offered by Pope Wu. A board-certified pediatrician, she trained at the Children's Hospital of New York, Columbia University Medical Center. We started off by asking Dr. Sullivan to share with us what motivated her to commit her life to providing health care to some of our world's neediest communities.
You know, I get asked this question a lot, as I'm sure is not surprising to you, and I still don't really have a great answer. Growing up, I knew that I always wanted to work with children, and I've always loved science in school. And so, therefore, medicine, and obviously more specifically pediatrics, is a really good way to combine those two. For me, pediatrics was always the obvious profession within medicine. But I think even more than that, I realized that through a lot of the work that I was or am doing, I should say, medicine really gives you the ability to not just focus on disease and making people better, but it also gives you the credibility to address so many different issues. I think just yesterday I saw a really good example of that. I went out to the Guarderia, which is an after-school program run by Pope Wu, the association that I work with down here, and gave a talk to the children's mothers about the negative effects of burning plastic on their kids' lungs. And I think the fact that I'm a pediatrician gave me so much more respect and credibility in the eyes of those mothers, even though I obviously didn't have to be a doctor to give that talk. Or talking with a teenager about contraception and avoiding pregnancy. Again, I've found that it seems to hold a lot more weight because I have an MD behind my name. So I guess it's a long way of saying that medicine is a great combination for me of working with children in science, but it also gives me the ability to address so many different issues. Obviously disease and wellness, but things like public health, education, nutrition, et cetera, all because I have an education in medicine.
Sure. And certainly there are many people in the world, regardless of profession, who have great messages to share. But as you mentioned, sometimes those messages are a little better received from people with a few letters behind their name or training that would indicate that they know more what they're talking about. Can you share with us a few maybe memorable stories of your experience practicing medicine abroad as regards those significant challenges?
Yeah, so I think probably the major challenge or obstacle that I've faced since I've been down here is learning how to use the education and training that I've used in the U.S. and all of the U.S. standards and apply them down here in a place where resources are incredibly limited and also apply them in a culturally appropriate way. And I think one of the best examples that highlights some of these challenges is the story of a 4-year-old boy that I saw not long after I arrived down here last June, who the year before I saw him had been diagnosed with a ventricular septal defect, which basically means that he has a hole between his left and right ventricles in his heart. And at the time, the year before I saw him, he had gone to see a cardiologist here in Shayla who had told him that he was fine and just needed to take a little bit of medicine. So he came to see me a year later. And as I was doing an exam and looking through his results, that really didn't sound right to me, not like something we would do in the U.S. And so I contacted some cardiologists at Columbia, and they agreed that this boy needed to get to surgery as soon as possible. So the first challenge that I faced was bringing him back to the pediatric cardiologist here in Shayla and trying to explain that to the cardiologist who disagreed with me. And, you know, standing there as obviously a gringo or as a white person, and trying to say, you know, not because of my education or because of this do I think I'm better, but trying to say it in an appropriate way, explaining why I believe that this boy needs surgery. So that was one challenge that I faced. We then, after talking to the cardiologist and convincing her about the surgery, we then spoke to the mom about it, who understood but called me a few days later to tell me that she had spoken with her husband, who was actually working illegally in the U.S. at the time, and he didn't want the boy to have surgery, not because he didn't agree that the boy needed surgery, but because he had heard a story of another wife who had brought her son to Guatemala City to receive medical care and ended up meeting another person there and leaving her first husband. And for me, again, working in the U.S., if I had heard this, I could easily have just acted in the best interest of the child and the laws behind the child. But I had to realize that here in Guatemala, culturally, the husband's word is kind of the law, for lack of better words. And so I had to work within that to speak with both the husband and the mom on multiple occasions to kind of convince them that, again, why it was so important that this boy needed surgery. And then this case just continued with certain challenges in terms of paying for pre-op labs and x-rays and echoes, for providing transportation to Guatemala City, for providing blood donors for the boy's surgery, and just many things that I wouldn't have necessarily faced in the U.S. But I'm happy to report that a few months ago, the boy did successfully undergo surgery. And so sometimes the rewards can be even greater as well. But I think it really is, just going back to my initial answer, is really kind of learning how to apply U.S. standards in limited resources and in a culturally appropriate way.
And that's certainly great news that the young man is doing better now and got the procedure that he needed. But it's just so interesting to hear you talk about the importance of people skills when it comes to practicing medicine in the environment in which you do. You know, it sounds like a lot of the obstacles that you encounter during your work in Guatemala aren't as much science-oriented or even medically-oriented, but more people-oriented. And one of the initiatives that you're a part of that kind of addresses those communication and people obstacles is the Pope Wu Clinic, which focuses on medical Spanish education and better health outcomes for doctors, students, healthcare workers in order to close that communication gap. Can you talk a little bit about how your work at the Pope Wu Clinic really integrates with your overall mission there for the TIMI Global Health?
So I really think of kind of my work with Pope Wu and my work with Timi Global Health as one and the same. So just to talk very briefly, Timi Global Health is an Indianapolis-based nonprofit that seeks to expand access to healthcare while empowering students and medical volunteers to engage directly in global development. And one of the ways that it does this is in collaboration with the international partners, facilitates medical brigades that come down specifically to Guatemala 5 times a year. And during that medical brigade, we go out into different communities and see over 400 patients throughout the week. And obviously not only provide primary health care at the moment, but also identify patients that need follow-up and specialty care. And what is so wonderful about Timi Global Health, though, is it doesn't just go down those 5 times and then leave in between those, but it also provides financial, medical, and human resource support to international partner organizations, and specifically here in Guatemala to Pope Wu, where I also work. And so when it's not, when the brigades are not specifically here, there are people, including me, but other people at Pope Wu as well, that are following up with the patients that we identified, that are continuing. We conduct weekly mobile clinics back into the communities that we go to. Really just, as I said, have an on-the-ground presence here for the entire year. And so I think of Timi Global Health or my work with Timi Global Health and my work with Pope Wu as being one and the same. And a constant thing year-round.
Sure, and one of the more interesting things that I noticed in my research is that Pope Wu facilitates away rotations for medical students. Can you talk a little bit more to our listeners today about the process of going about maybe securing one of those away rotations and maybe any other ways that students can get involved in your work?
Of course. So yeah, so just to really briefly summarize what Pope Wu is, it is a self-described social program with language instruction. And they work on, along with being a Spanish school where you come down and take Spanish, they have a number of projects that they work on, including this guardería, which I mentioned, which is an after-school program for children, a safe stove project, reforestation and ecological education. They do a student scholarship program, and then they also have a health program, which incorporates a part-time clinic that's based here out of in Xela, and then these mobile medical teams that go out into the rural villages, as well as public health education projects. And there is something called the Medical Spanish Program, where we get a lot of medical students, usually first years and fourth years, although occasionally we have second years and third years that manage to swing it so they can come down, but that spend usually about 4 weeks, although again, the timeline is flexible here. And they, in the morning, spend the time working in the clinic, going out into the communities and working on public health projects. And then in the afternoons, taking medical Spanish in a one-on-one setting. And it is actually pretty easy to set up. You just go on to the website, popewu.org, and all of the information is available there, as well as that is how you register and sign up as well.
And are there any other ways that medical students can get involved in your work down in Guatemala?
So I have had a few other medical students or pre-medical students that have come down. There are a couple other major projects that I'm working on. One of them is what we are calling the Supplemental Nutrition Project, which I mentioned earlier that Guatemala has the third highest rate of chronic malnutrition in the world. And chronic malnutrition is another way of saying stunting or low height for age. And what it means is that Guatemalan children early on in their life are just not getting the proper nutrients or vitamins to grow and to develop in the way that they would have the potential to do, meaning that later on in life, they are not only short for their age, but they also have not quite developed cognitively. They don't do as well in school. They don't quite have the same economic potential and everything. So I've spent some time down here looking into different ways to address this issue. And I started off looking at government programs that already exist and found that while some do exist, unfortunately, especially in today's current economy, there just aren't very many resources for those programs. I also spent some time working with a student who just got her master's in health sciences, developing some picture-based dietary education menus as a way of kind of addressing this change using resources that are both available to the communities and affordable here. But I realized that that wasn't quite enough, and so I just started a program where we are using something called Nutributter, which is a lipid-based nutrient supplement made up of peanut butter, a little bit of powdered milk, and then it has 40 vitamins, minerals, and micronutrients in the recommended daily allowance for young kids. Some of you might have heard of the supplement called Plumpy Nut, which is made by the same company, but the Plumpy Nut is a high-calorie nutritional supplement that addresses acute malnutrition, and this NutriButter is designed more to address this chronic malnutrition. And so what we are doing is working with kids between the ages of 6 and 24 months and providing this supplement while at the same time doing a program of nutritional education. And I have had some students that have come down and helped me with that program, and something that I'm always looking for more help on. And as I mentioned earlier with Pope Wu, there are some other public health projects that are going on, including the Safe Stove Building Project and a lot of other public health education projects that we are always looking for and very excited to have help with.
Yeah, some very cool initiatives indeed. I wouldn't be surprised if you receive a few emails or phone calls after this episode from interested listeners in helping you in those endeavors. But I know that there are a number of our listeners out there and medical students across the country who are just so interested in getting involved intimately in global health, in filling the types of societal needs that you talked about earlier in the interview, but that also want to have a family and want to have a life outside of medicine and are maybe a little worried or apprehensive about being able to balance the two. Can you maybe just tell us a little bit about how you handle having a husband and now a young child with all of these significant responsibilities that you have going back and forth between New York and Guatemala?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is a little bit challenging. And, you know, I found out that I was pregnant 4 days before moving down to Guatemala. But I think what we realized is that this was something my husband and I was something that we wanted to do. But as you mentioned, so like so many other people, we also really wanted to have a family. And my son Jack was born 6 months ago here in Guatemala, and it's something that I couldn't be happier with. He is so loved here. And you know, and I think that's something that'll be really important to him growing up as well, to have been born here. And so while I think it is always difficult to balance a family and international work, I think it's something that we have definitely managed to do, not only do, but enjoy very much. And I look very much forward to having Jack grow up, learning a little bit of Spanish. And as I said, growing up in Guatemala.
And it's just so encouraging for all of us to hear from people who have done it, who are doing great work abroad and in healthcare, even here in the United States, and also balancing happy family lives, which is so important to so many people. As we close the interview today, can you offer any advice to our medical and pre-medical student listeners as they continue on their path to becoming competent, compassionate, empathetic physicians like yourself?
I think that for the pre-medical students, one advice that I always like to give is that if it's possible at all to take time off between college and medical school and do something that is not even related to medicine at all. Whether it's as I mentioned, I did Teach for America for 2 years, or whether you go and spend a year abroad doing something or something just completely unrelated. But I think that all of those other experiences really are so important to making you go on to become a better physician. I think for the medical students, I would say to continue really to seek out any opportunity in medical school, in residency, and even beyond to do something that is a little bit out of the ordinary. Really look to do international rotations or rural health rotations, because those experiences will really be instrumental in your training. I also think especially for the medical students, to really never forget kind of the responsibility and the credibility that you have as a future physician, and that the ability with every patient encounter that you really have to make an impact on their life. You know, obviously sometimes it really is just providing a medicine to make them feel better, but often so many other times it's really just by listening and showing that you understand, or by giving someone a hug. You really do have this great potential to really, really, really positively impact people's lives. And I think to never forget that responsibility and that potential that you have.
Dr. Sullivan, thank you so much for joining us on Right Rounds today.
Thank you.
Matt, I got to say, in that interview, we talked about a lot of very cool things that Dr. Sullivan is doing down in Guatemala. Can you share with us maybe some examples of some other innovative ideas employed by Timi Global Health physicians in other parts of the world?
Meg is down in Guatemala full time, but a lot of our programming is focused on sending down short-term teams that support the work of our partner organizations. And those short-term teams are limited by the fact that they are short-term, as well as the fact that they don't have all the resources that they need. I think probably Timmy's most important innovation isn't necessarily related to one particular physician, but it's related to our programming overall. Timmy has made a huge effort at taking short-term teams and effectively integrating them into a much larger structure that allows them to truly expand access to healthcare rather than just provide acute services. In every country that Timmy works, we have referral systems. So if you find a patient in a rural area that has a heart murmur, the most that a physician can do in a rural primary care clinic is refer that patient for an EKG. The problem is referring that patient, as Meg talked about, is very, very logistically challenging, and you need a system in place that allows for that patient to actually access care. Timmy's invested a lot of money in those behind-the-scenes systems so that if we see a patient in any of the places that we work, we have not only the financial resources but also the on-the-ground staff and the partner organizations to support that staff that allow that patient to be transferred to a healthcare facility where they're going to get the care. That's an example of taking what I call Timmy's work way beyond the medical clinic. We also have employed other pieces of innovative programming where we return to communities consistently. So in Guatemala, where Meg was talking about, we work with Pope Wu and various rural Mayan communities. Every single time that we have a medical team in country, they're returning to the same exact communities. It allows us to treat patients with chronic conditions like malnutrition, as Meg talked about, or hypertension and diabetes. It allows us to keep patient records on communities. It allows us to build long-term relationships with community leaders. And that goes way beyond what some other organizations do in terms of short-term outreach. And it allows us to, you know, truly, hopefully have an impact on health outcomes. And I think the last thing that's really innovative is Timmy operates truly on a partnership model. When Meg talks about Pope Wu and when I sit down with the leadership at Pope Wu to decide how we're going to invest financial resources in the organization, I by no means tell Pope Wu what to do. I'm asking Pope Wu about their needs, about what they think I should invest the money in. And because of that, I think we're helping to meet the needs of their organization and through their organization, the patients a lot better than we would be able to.
On that note, Dr. Sullivan obviously talked about quite a few of the obstacles that she faces on a daily basis, not the least of which are the lingual and cultural barriers that she faces and seems to tackle with great skill. What are some other unique hurdles that Timmy Global Health physicians and volunteers all over the world have to clear in order to pursue your mission? And how, Matt, do you help prepare them to do so?
Yeah, I think one of the most important obstacles that they face is doctors, most of them are specialized. Whenever they travel and work with Timmy, they have to work in a far more general environment, and in a far more general environment with minimal diagnostic equipment, minimal support systems. And so it puts a stress on their skill set. I think one of the things that Timmy has done to really make sure that that does not do any harm to the patient, and we've got a huge push at Timmy to make sure that we don't do any harm. A lot of international medical outreach has the potential to sometimes do more harm than good, not if it's structured correctly. And so we've put a big focus. So one of the things we always talk to our doctors about is don't push your skill set too far. We say this with all of our volunteers. When students work with us, we make sure that they understand that they're there for a support team and nothing else. No student in any one of our clinics is allowed to do anything that they couldn't do in a U.S. hospital. And we do that because we really believe that the do-no-harm approach is really important to practicing medicine within the borders of the United States as well as outside. The types of things that we've set up that support the physicians really allow them to be specialists and not necessarily know everything and still provide some quality care. So I talked about our referral system. You know, when a doctor doesn't know, we have the ability to get that patient into a hospital with a local doctor and with diagnostic equipment to figure out if their hunch is correct. So that's something that they face, and that's one of the structures that we've put in place to really make sure that they can provide quality care to patients.
And Dr. Sullivan talked at length about how medical students can get involved in her great work down there in Guatemala. Currently, we here at Radio Rounds are working with one of our sponsors, the MedPlus Advantage Insurance Program, to run a contest, an essay contest. And Timmy Global Health is an active partner in this contest. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, this is a fantastic opportunity, not only for Timmy, but for our students. As Meg mentioned, Timmy is really powered by its students. We've got student chapters at 18 universities across the United States, both undergrad and graduate students. And I've been really looking for ways to provide more opportunities. So when MedPlus Advantage came around and said, what we'd love to do is we'd love to sponsor a contest where residents, medical students, pre-med, and other students have the opportunity to apply to travel with Timmy for free, not just on a short-term clinic, but then to spend time with the partner organizations that we support, potentially POPU in Guatemala or the hospital that we support in Ecuador in Quito, or potentially the hospital in the Amazon Basin. And so this is really an amazing program. MedPlus Advantage is being generous enough that they're going to provide all the funding for this. They're not only going to provide the funding for the travel and the lodging, but they're also going to bring in an iPad and a nice camera, which would probably be welcome to any undergrad or medical student. And it's a way for us to really extend the focus that we have on providing students the opportunity to go abroad, work in the developing world, and ask the right questions. What we really want our students to do is use their experience abroad to understand more about the challenges that low-income communities face. And whether or not that student it becomes a Paul Farmer and works abroad forever, or whether or not they spend the rest of their time in the United States, we think that because they go abroad and they see these challenges there, they're going to ask the right questions for the rest of their life. And so, you know, MedPlus Advantage is giving us a great opportunity to do that for two contest winners this coming winter, and hopefully more down the line.
Well, certainly a big thanks to our featured guest today, Dr. Meg Sullivan. As she mentioned, please visit popwu.org. That's popwuj.org for more information on how to get involved in her work. And a huge thanks to you, Matt, for making the trip here to Dayton to join us in studio and share your insights.
No, it's been wonderful to be here. For anyone who wants to learn more about Timmy, go to timmyglobalhealth.org. And also, I really encourage everyone to go to www.takeatripwithtimmy.com, where the contest will be played out, and apply. It's going to be a wonderful experience.
And be sure to join us next week on Radio Rounds. Our featured guest will be Dr. Stephen Schlossman, an assistant professor of psychiatry at the Harvard Medical School and the world's foremost authority on the neurobiology of the living dead. In other words, he's a huge zombie buff. You can tune in every Sunday at noon Eastern Time on WWSU 106.9 FM and Sundays at midnight Eastern Time on WYSO 91.3 FM. And of course, you can always listen live on RadioRounds.org. Also on our website, be sure to check out this week's Writing Rounds segment entitled, Can We Do More to Protect Pitchers from Head Injuries? By Writing Rounds contributor Dr. Daniel George, an assistant professor in the College of Medicine at the Penn State University. He writes about the serious head injuries that pitchers suffer in baseball and the steps that we can take to prevent further damage. Writing Rounds is a place for any of our listeners and contributors to provide their own opinions on medicine and healthcare.
You can contact Radio Rounds via email, like them on Facebook, and follow them on Twitter. All that information is on RadioRounds.org, where you can now listen to all past episodes on demand. These podcasts are also available as free downloads on iTunes. Just search the iTunes store for Radio Rounds.
And we'd now like to take a second to thank and credit those who made today's show possible.
Production made possible in part by MedPlus Advantage, sponsored by the American Medical Association, providing group disability and life insurance to students and residents through participating educational institutions. Visit us at MedPlusAdvantage.com.
And Radio Rounds is proudly partnered with the Student Doctor Network online at studentdoctor.net. Have questions about medical school or residency? Check out SDN Answers to view frequently asked questions or ask one of your own. Available online at studentdoctor.net. A big thanks today to our producers, Shami Das, Sarah Buckingham, and Yojin Patel, as well as our entire team who works so hard here at the Radio Rounds World Headquarters in Dayton, Ohio, to bring you brand new episodes every week. And of course, the biggest thanks of all goes out to everyone listening.
Please remember that the views and opinions expressed on Radio Rounds are not representative of the views and opinions of the partners of Radio Rounds or of the Wright State University Boonshoff School of Medicine.
Join us next week or download our next podcast, and be sure to check out RadioRounds.org for more information. Have a great week, everyone. For our entire staff here at Radio Rounds, I'm John Corker, and one day, we'll be your doctors. Radio Rounding, we're rounding. Welcome to Radio Rounds.